This is The Draft Room with Brian Lowe on American Airlines Patriots.com radio. The Draft Room is your exclusive look inside the NFL draft. Think you know who will go in the top 10, whose stock is rising, and whose is falling?
There's a lot of guys with good value on those.
Who will Mr. Irrelevant be this year? You'll find out as we go inside the Draft Room with Brian Lowe.
Welcome into the Draft Room. I am Brian Lowe. Very excited to be here with you each Wednesday leading up to the draft and through the following Wednesday after the draft, talking about the NFL draft. Tomorrow, that's April 1st, we can finally say it's draft month. How exciting is that? You know, unless your team goes to the Super Bowl, and you go into February, if your season ends in December or January, you know, the draft is the next big thing on the schedule, and we're getting close here to 3 months since the New England Patriots last suited up on a football field. We're very close to 2 months since any NFL team suited up for an actual NFL game in the Super Bowl. And every team can relate to the draft. The draft affects every team. You don't need me to tell you that. But we're very excited to bring you the Draft Room each Wednesday from 12 to 1 Eastern here on Patriots.com radio. Like I said, we'll go five straight Wednesdays, four of them leading up to the draft, including the day before round one, and then the first Wednesday after the draft. That would be April 28th, I believe it is. And we're going to have some guests. We're going to take your calls and emails, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. You might know me from the Fantasy Lowdown here on these airwaves, and also Patriots Today on patriots.com. And really, for the last couple months, I'd say about 50% of the work that I've been doing covering the Patriots has been draft-related, really starting at the Combine. Not starting at the Combine, but going to the Combine. I was at BC Pro Day. And we've got all kinds of footage of projected draft picks in our studios, and I've been pouring through those. And by no means am I an expert. I don't know this stuff any more so than you do as far as what teams will do. Thanks, Jason. I continue to not be the brightest guy in the world. But it's a lot of fun to analyze, dissect what teams might do in the draft, look at mock drafts. And to me, the new format for the draft, the NFL has changed the format to having round one on Thursday, rounds two and three on Friday, and rounds four through seven on Saturday. That's April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. To me, is fantastic. I'm extremely excited about it. I think it makes three of the rounds in particular extremely compelling, rounds one, round two, and round four. We've already heard NFL coaches, including Bill Belichick, talk about how when you have another day, a night in between draft rounds, to restock your board, maybe talk to other teams about trades, and really have a better feel for what is going on in the draft, what trends might be going on, more so than 10 minutes or 5 minutes in between picks, is going to make trading more, there's going to be more trading, more involvement, more movement potentially. So I'm very excited about that. I think it's going to really make it exciting if you're a Patriots fan with round two. The Patriots have three picks in round two. And Friday night around 8:30, 9 o'clock, I think is going to be a pivotal period of time for the future of the New England Patriots. I think, being perfectly blunt, I think that's safe to say. I think what they have to do in the draft this year, with those four picks they have in the top 53, they need to really stock up the future of this year of this team in conjunction with what they did in the with those four second-round picks last year. And obviously the jury is still out on guys from last year's draft, and the jury will still be out on guys that they select this year, really going forward for two or three years. But they've really got to make some hay. Everybody involved in the draft, almost across the board, seems to think that this is a very deep draft, a draft where you don't need to rely on just the first round or even just the second round to get potential starters, and that makes it very intriguing to me. We're going to hear from Tony Pauline later on in the show, really in about 10 minutes from now, from draftinsider.net. He's also a contributor to SI.com. His website has a mock draft. We'll talk to him about that. And really, once you get to this period of time, we're at March 31st, tomorrow's April 1st, there's news, or I guess you could say alleged news involving the draft really every day, and this week is no different. What we're going to try to do here on this show over these next 5 weeks is talk not just about the Patriots and what the Patriots have to do in the draft, but really across the board, all 32 teams, get an overall NFL-wide view of what to expect in this year's draft. And two of the main news items from this week, one of them involves you know, the league, the NFL, the top of the draft board, and one of them involves the Patriots. Let's talk about these. And once again, you can feel free to chime in to us, webradio@patriots.com. We do have a couple of emails we'll be getting to very shortly. 508-543-7482 is the phone number. Oklahoma had its pro day earlier this week, and that was where Sam Bradford had the opportunity to be on display for NFL teams. Now, Sam Bradford is coming off an injury. He was a prolific passer at Oklahoma, won the Heisman Trophy, and no one really had a feel for where he might be drafted. Obviously, he was going to be top 10, top 15, certainly in round one. Regardless, there was no real reason to think that his shoulder injury was career-threatening or anything like that, but NFL teams, NFL scouts really had to see for themselves exactly where he stood with that injury. Watch him throw the ball, watch him move around, and all that. Well, he had his pro day earlier this week down in Oklahoma, and it looks as though Sam Bradford has solidified himself as potentially the number one pick in the draft, and it looks highly unlikely he'll go beyond number four. Now, St. Louis has the first pick in the draft, and what I've read in a few different occasions is the last 2 years they've had a high draft pick. They've passed up a potential franchise quarterback for defensive linemen. Now, you know, you can make the argument that that's a good way to build a football team. A lot of first-round quarterbacks flame out. It's not a surefire pick by any means. But how would the Rams feel if, once again, they let a potential Pro Bowl franchise-type quarterback pass them by for a defensive lineman? And if you look back a couple months ago, Dominick Sue out of Nebraska, Gerald McCoy, those were two guys out of Oklahoma. Those were two guys looked at as good chance they'd be 1 and 2 in the draft. Well, it looks as though Sam Bradford may have propelled himself to the number one pick to the St. Louis Rams 3 weeks from tomorrow. Here's what Peter King wrote in his Monday Morning Quarterback this week. According to scouts, quote, Bradford was accurate from start to finish. He threw several beautiful strikes downfield, hitting receivers in stride some 40 yards from the line of scrimmage. He didn't display a rifle arm, yet showed enough strength to make all the throws. End quote. And then Peter King writes, Bradford, who underwent shoulder reconstruction on October 28th, would have had to mess up his 50 balls today and then not be very good in private workouts with the Rams and Redskins to not be the first player chosen in the 2010 draft. So it looks like
How
Sam Bradford.
How dumb is Peter King?
It looks like Sam Bradford has made himself the first pick in the draft, and to me it makes the most sense for the St. Louis Rams. This is an organization that hasn't really shown much improvement the last couple years, even if they've hit rock bottom. And they've pretty much been rock bottom the last 2 years. And you know, I've kind of gone both ways on first-round quarterbacks in the past, but some of the guys in recent years, and I'm including Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, Mark Sanchez, have shown that they have what it takes to be a quarterback. And as risky as it sometimes is to take a quarterback early in the draft, the rewards outweigh the risk. And if you think Sam Bradford is going to be that guy to lead your team for the next dozen years or so, I don't think the Rams have much of a choice here. So Sam Bradford is probably going to be the first pick in the draft. Now, a news item that came up in the last 24, 36 hours or so that relates to the Patriots is having to do with the guy who could be the most celebrated and decorated second-round pick in NFL history, and that, of course, is Tim Tebow. I was at the Combine. There wasn't a single player, not a single player, from Sam Bradford and Jimmy Clausen to Dominick Sue and Gerald McCoy, Russell Okung, nobody who had as much of a following at the Combine, and I'm talking about media attention, as Tim Tebow down in Florida. And for valid reasons. I mean, the guy was a Heisman Trophy winner, perhaps the most decorated and accomplished college player of all time. And along those lines, there are serious concerns about what he is going to do, what he's going to be at the NFL level. Bill Belichick has ties to Florida with Urban Meyer. He's a good friend of his. It seems as though every single year, Belichick makes a trip down to Gainesville and spends some time on the Florida campus, looking at their prospects, batting around ideas with Urban Meyer. But not once in the time that I have followed and covered the Patriots have I ever heard about Bill Belichick whining and dining a prospective draft pick anywhere, let alone the north end of Boston. And it appears as though Bill Belichick, Nick Caserio, and Tim Tebow had a little chicken parm maybe some ziti, a little shrimp scampi. I don't know exactly what they ate. At a North End diner, not a North End restaurant, not just any North End restaurant, but the one owned by Ray Bourque. Not sure how romantic the music was being played at Tresca. There were reports that Tim Tebow was outside the restaurant with a football. Now, the Patriots are notorious for keeping everything secret, keeping everything in-house. The fact that they would take a draft pick and a Tim Tebow, maybe the most high-profile guy in this year's draft, out to dinner in one of the busiest, most populated areas of Boston, to me, smells fishy.
Hey, they got to eat, too, and I'm sure it wasn't fishy. It might have been chickeny.
They certainly do have to eat, and I can vouch for the fact that the food and beverage department here in Gillette Stadium does a bang-up job for anyone, especially athletes and the coaching staff. So I don't think they had to go to North End to eat. It certainly is what it is, Jason. And what I think it is a smokescreen. And we're going to ask Tony Pauline about that. Listen, the Patriots, don't do that. They don't take guys out for nice dinners when they're the player is the one that has to sell themselves to the Patriots. So I find this one a little too public for what the Patriots tend to do. But that being said, I have my doubts about Tim Tebow in the NFL, but I think he's squarely in that category of a guy that Bill Belichick would love to get his hands on and see what he can do at the pro level. Maybe that's as a quarterback. Maybe that's as a tight end. Maybe that's as a special who knows? I think he's the kind of guy that Bill Belichick wouldn't mind getting into the system and seeing what he can do. So that's obviously been one of the issues at the forefront of the draft the last couple of weeks. Last couple of months, really, and will only intensify in the next couple of weeks. You know, Tim Tebow could go in the first round. There's been a lot of momentum, I think, over the last 48, 72 hours that Tim Tebow will not get out of the first round, which then begs the question, well, would the Patriots consider him at 22? I can't imagine that. But would they consider him with one of their three second-round picks? And those second-round picks are at 44, 47, and 53. Maybe that's right in the wheelhouse of where he's going to go. But do the Patriots have too many more pressing needs to go with a developmental quarterback in round two? You know, they've got Tom Brady. They've not been against taking quarterbacks in the draft in the past, even with Tom Brady on board. But third round, maybe Kevin O'Connell a couple years ago, Matt Cassel in the seventh round, Brian Hoyer as an undrafted free agent. That seems to be in the range that they tend to go, more second day or fourth to seventh round. Third round with Kevin O'Connell was probably higher than anyone would have thought. Second round, I got to think, is pretty high, and they don't have a third round pick, but wow, plenty of intrigue when it comes to Tim Tebow. So the draft is 3 weeks from tomorrow, begins 3 weeks from tomorrow, and we want to hear from you on what you think the Patriots should do, what you think other NFL teams should or will do in the draft. Our first ever emailer here in the draft room with Brian Lowe is Sam from Brighton. And Sam has a two-pronged email here. The first one, hi, Brian. I'm going to give you two draft scenarios for the Patriots' first four picks, and you pick which one you would take. You have to take one, Sam says. You have to take one. All right, his first scenario has Sergio Kindle, outside linebacker, pass rusher out of Texas, with the first pick. Then with the three second-round picks, Rob Gronkowski, we'll get to him, very intriguing guy with a massive red flag in the second round. Then Marty Gilliard, the wide receiver out of Cincinnati, and the aforementioned Tim Tebow with the third pick. So Kindle, Gronkowski, Gilliard, Tebow. Then his scenario number two is Golden Tate, the Notre Dame wide receiver who, listen, with what he did under Charlie Weiss, I think a lot of people have him as a perfect Patriots possibility. Carlos Dunlap, Florida pass rusher in the second round. Toby Gearhart, the Stanford running back Heisman candidate in the second round. And Tim Tebow in the second round. So Tim Tebow, the common denominator here. Sam obviously thinks that, I don't know if I should say he thinks they'll take Tim Tebow or thinks they should consider him. So it's Kindle, Gronkowski, and Gilliard, or Tate, Dunlap, and Gearhart. The major red flag with Rob Gronkowski, and like I said, we'll get more in depth on him, is back surgery that he had. That, to me, when I saw this news and this sort of some confirmation about how the back injury might affect him in the pros, is a major red flag. And I think second round at this point might be too high for him. And I'm not sold on Sergio Kindle. If I had to take one of these two, Sam, I'm going with your scenario number two. I think Golden Tate would be the perfect guy for the Patriots at wide receiver. I just don't think they're going to go receiver in the first round. I also don't think they're going to go outside linebacker in the first round. I think they're going to go defensive line or offensive line in the first round, to be honest with you. I think Carlos Dunlap is an intriguing guy for the second round out of Florida, although the Patriots have not had as much success with Florida guys as you might think with Belichick's relationship with Urban Meyer. I think Toby Gerhardt's a great guy to have on your team. I think second round for this team might be a little too high, and then you've got Tebow. But like I said, I think of your two scenarios, Sam, I like scenario two better because I think Kindle, while it's the need position, I just don't think they're going to go that route, and Gronkowski has some serious red flags. Marty Gilliard's a nice player, a guy that I think the Patriots should consider in the second round, but overall I like your scenario number two a little bit better. Sam continues on with some trade proposals. And you know what? We'll actually get to those trade proposals a little later on. We'll split up Sam's email there. What I want to do before we get to Tony Pauline, and we are planning on having him on a little bit here on the show, our first ever draft room, is just take a quick look at a few mock drafts and maybe talk about the top five and then talk about the Patriots. Like I said, what we're trying to do here is mix in some Patriots draft talk with a broader scope of the NFL and the NFL draft. Don Banks, a very well-respected writer, NFL writer, and he does a series of mock drafts on SI.com and updates them every week or so, every couple weeks, and his most recent one was back, I think, about 2 weeks ago. He has Sergio Kindle to the Patriots. Clark Judge, this is his last mock draft a while back, Sam Bradford, Dominican Sue, Gerald McCoy, Russell Okung, and Eric Berry. It seems like those top three, Bradford, Sue, and McCoy, potentially in that order, it's almost becoming consensus that those are the three guys that are going to go in the first three with the first three picks, St. Louis, Detroit, and Tampa. Then it gets a little shaky at number four. Does Washington go quarterback? And if they do, you know, I think if Sam Bradford is there, they absolutely pounce. But assuming Sam Bradford's taken number one, Jimmy Clausen might be there for the taking. And like we talked about with St. Louis, do you pass up the opportunity to take a quarterback in the first round? Russell Okung is seen as a first rounder by a few different people, and then number five, I think number five is where we're going to see, you know, Kansas City and Scott Pioli try to get a sense of where they might go. On the line with us right now, our first ever guest here in the draft room is Tony Pauline of DraftInsider.net and also SI.com. Tony, thanks for joining us today. How you doing?
Well, it's my honor to be the first guest ever on the show. Thank you for having me.
Well, here on Patriots.com, we're always trying some new things, and we're going with a weekly draft show leading up to the draft and then just after the draft. And like I said at the top of the show, tomorrow is April 1st. Draft month is basically here. It doesn't get more exciting than this, does it?
Well, it's been draft month for me for the past 8 months, especially been since January. So it's really the only non-draft month for me is May. So, yeah, I mean, it gets a little bit more exciting. You get more people from the outside who start to look in, a lot more people offering opinions. But believe me, January, February, and especially March are really crazy months.
No question about it. Really, once the NFL season ends, and certainly if you're a draft Nick, around the clock, around the year, you're looking at these guys. But really, once the NFL season ends, you get a better sense of where NFL teams are picking and what their needs are, then we can really get in full force. Now, the St. Louis Rams, having the first pick in the draft by default means that they have a lot of needs. Sam Bradford had his pro day this week, and we were just talking about really the reports out of that pro day were really roundly praised. And does it look as though, at this point, Sam Bradford is targeted for St. Louis?
I would think so. I mean, just as long as the St. Louis Rams medical staff checks off on it, looks at those MRIs of his injured shoulder and say that, you know, hey, listen, this is not going to be a problem 4 or 5 years from now. We're not going to have arthritis developing in this kid's shoulder, and it's going to be a hindrance. And, I mean, I think there's a lot of factors. The team is in desperate need of a quarterback, desperate need of a quarterback. And it's also an organization that has spent a lot of money and a lot of early draft picks on defensive line the past few years. You know, on one hand, I don't envy the St. Louis Rams, yet on the other hand, they're in a good position because unlike years past, this is a good time to have the first pick of the draft. Like you said, Bradford had a terrific pro day. You don't want to get all terrific workout the other day. You don't want to get all bottled up in just one single workout, but I think it was just an extension of what we would have seen, you know, moving forward had he been able to complete his junior season healthy. And I think it makes a lot of sense. But then again, it's going to be tough to pass up on an impact guy like Sue, you know, a defensive lineman. And the Patriots have had success with guys like Richard Seymour in the past, you know, who are game changers. Sure. Sue is that type of player. And, it, you know, you run the risk that if Bradford doesn't pan out and Sue turns out to be an all-pro type guy, you know, that's the type of pick that can get people fired.
And is there pressure on the Rams because in the last couple of drafts they have taken defensive linemen and they've also passed on some quarterbacks who to this point seem like they're panning out? Mark Sanchez, Matt Ryan, and Matthew Stafford may not have been there for them, but is there pressure on them to take that quarterback, even with the risks, as opposed to another defensive lineman?
I think the pressure from the outside may be reversed. I think that they're getting a lot of pressure on the outside from people who want Sue, especially because St. Louis is right in Big 12 country, and they've watched him play a lot. Granted, Oklahoma as well, but it's closer to Nebraska. Mm-hmm. You know, they've seen Sue play. They've seen the dominance. So I think from the outside, the pressure may be to take Sue over Bradford.
Hmm.
I think what happened is that workout on Monday basically gave them some breathing room. I think they breathed a sigh of relief, not only in the war room to say, hey, listen, our initial instincts on possibly taking this guy with the first pick were right, but also in the public relations department, because now Bradford's probably going to be an easier sell, you know, to the fans and to the skeptical football public. You know, the thing is, if they draft Bradford, I don't know that he's going to be the starter on opening day for a variety of reasons, where Sue probably is going to be a starter from opening day for whichever team selects him. So there's probably going to be, if they go the Bradford route, which is the way it looks right now, mm-hmm. there's probably still going to be a little bit of dissension and people screaming on the outside early on.
As there always is, and it's a multi-layered decision, obviously, for the Rams. Now, with Bradford having such a successful pro day the other day, could that intensify some trade talks, other teams like namely Washington picking up number 4 or even Buffalo? Is there any chance that there's trade talk involving that number 1 pick even more so now because of how impressive Bradford seemed to be?
Oh, without a doubt. Like I said, you know, it's a good position for the Rams to be in. This is one of the years that you really want to have the first pick of the draft because there's a lot of quality at the top end,
right.
You know, opposed to previous years. So, you know, that's why I think what's going to happen is they're going to talk contract with Bradford's agents and Sue's agents to get an idea of what the contracts or what the kind of money that they're going to have to be laying out, and they're also going to explore draft possibilities. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. They could, you know, St. Louis could move down later on and get one of the good defensive linemen. If they trade with Washington, maybe pick up Eric Berry. You know, if they trade down to 10, further with Buffalo, you know, they're going to get extra selections. I don't think they'll come out of this draft with the quarterback, but you never know. Clawson could slide, and, you know, they could look in that route. They've said that they like Clawson a lot. I don't know if that's true or that's just a smokescreen. But I think they can win in a variety of ways with that first pick.
We're talking to Tony Pauline of DraftInsider.net and his most recent uncanny mock draft from a couple days ago. You do have Sam Bradford going number 1 to St. Louis, and then Dominique Sue to Detroit, Gerald McCoy to Tampa, Russell Okung to Washington, and Brian Bulaga, the tackle from Iowa, going to Kansas City in your top 5. Obviously, that seems to show that the strength of this draft, at least in terms of the upper echelon of the draft, is on the offensive and defensive lines. Why don't you give us a little bit of your analysis of those two positions as it relates to the higher-end players like the ones we just mentioned?
Well, it's one of the deepest defensive line drafts, defensive ends and defensive tackles in the longest time. I mean, you literally have 16 players at those two positions on the defensive line who grade out as potential first-round picks and who usually would be first-round picks in a draft, which basically means that, you know, midway through the second round, there will still be some defensive linemen there that are first-round potential. So you can get a good bargain. You know, you talked about Sue, Gerald McCoy. There were some people who liked Gerald McCoy better than Sue, Ndamukong Suh, because of his first step off the snap. Dan Williams of Tennessee is moving up draft boards, had a terrific senior season. Prior to the year, was graded by NFL Scouting Services as a free agent. Now he's going to be a mid-first-round pick,
wow.
The top defensive tackle in this draft. Brian Price of UCLA, Jared Odrick, another pair of defensive tackles who figure into the later part of round one. You know, at defensive end, the top defensive end in the draft is probably Derek Morgan of Georgia Tech, although some people do like Jason Pierre-Paul of South Florida. Both guys are pass rushers who get up the field and create a lot of havoc. Both guys are top 12 picks. Brandon Graham of Michigan, a guy who, you know, doesn't pass the eyeball test, is a little bit shorter than people would like, you know, doesn't have the great size, but he's a terrific football player and has done nothing but wreak havoc up the field. And then later on, in the middle and late part of round one, you got guys like Carlos Dunlap of Florida, Everson Griffin of USC, and guys who can play in a variety of systems. Dunlap's a two-gap defensive end. Everson Griffin's probably going to be a very good 4-3 defensive end. Some people project him as an outside linebacker in a 3-4. But guys who can play at the next level quickly come into and fill a starting position. As far as the tackle position is concerned, it's a terrific year for left tackles. Russell Okung, Brian Bulaga. Bulaga has the ability to play several spots on the offensive line. Bruce Campbell of Maryland, tremendous athlete, just lit up the combine. A guy who's going to need a little bit of time, but a guy who's got a great football future. Anthony Davis of Rutgers, guy that's got some character issues, but again, a tremendous pass-blocking left tackle, and those guys are worth their weight in gold come draft day.
Interesting stuff from Tony Pauline. Now, looking at your mock draft, talking about the Patriots here, you have Demaryius Thomas, the wide receiver out of Georgia Tech, coming to the Patriots at number 22, and he's a guy who had all the talent in the world and great production, unfortunately suffered an injury shortly before the combine, putting obviously his draft status in doubt, sort of like Sam Bradford. You know, teams just need to have to be able to look at him in these in this draft process and the medical and all that. What made you go with Demaryius Thomas for the Pats?
Number one, it's value. I mean, it's a terrific value pick. There's a very good chance that if Thomas had not suffered that small fracture in his foot right before the combine and had worked out, he's probably a top 12 pick, definitely a top 15 pick, because by all accounts, he was turning in some blistering times during the workout. So it's a great value pick, and it's also a good pick moving forward. I mean, you know, the Patriots have got to stock up moving forward, you know, with some young talent. I know they've got Sam Aiken on the roster. I don't know what their exact feelings of them about him are. They've had great success with a guy by the name of Randy Moss, who's probably coming to the end of his career in a few seasons. And, you know, Thomas is a guy that you can probably plug right in there. And the more targets you have for Tom Brady, the more effective you're going to make that offense. And Demaryius Thomas is just an awesome target. I mean, he's an undervalued receiver. He's a guy whose best football is ahead of him. The more he plays, the more he learns. I mean, he was a dominant player in an option attack at Georgia Tech. Plus, he does those little things right. You know, the things that people miss, his downfield blocking is terrific. And I think it's something that the Patriots coaching staff would love.
Has a day gone by, Tony, in the last couple months as you've been analyzing the draft where you have not discussed Tim Tebow?
I mean, I don't get all hyped up. That's a lot of media hype. I mean,
sure.
People ask me about him. I don't go out of my way. We spoke about him this morning in an interview I did in a Florida radio station. I only talk about him when I'm asked about him. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I'm going to ask you about him, and here's why. Everyone around New England, around Boston right now is all, trying to figure out, trying to analyze and dissect the situation that was reported on yesterday. Bill Belichick, Nick Caserio, and Tim Tebow having dinner together in the North End. Now, I don't think, what a lot of people think is the Patriots won't bring a guy into the North End if they don't want people to know that they have brought a guy into the North End. It's kind of unlike this team. What do you think? Smokescreen?
Well, I think we probably can't get good Italian food in Gainesville for number one.
That's a great point. You might as well come up to Boston
exactly.
For that.
Exactly. You know, listen, these teams are allowed 30 visits.
Mm-hmm.
They usually have, you know, 7, 8, sometimes 9 draft picks. So you're going to explore every opportunity. And again, you know, this could be a situation where, you know, the Pats have had success with guys like Matt Castle, where they bring him in, you know, they develop him,
sure.
And then they trade him for huge draft, you know, big draft picks down the road. Or eventually, you know, you got to start to concern yourself about the future after Tom Brady. I mean, the guy has been banged up recently. You don't know how much more he's got in the tank. It's not a bad idea to say, hey, listen, you know, like Tom Brady, we got a guy here, Tim Tebow, who's passionate about the game.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot going on between the ears. You know, he does need a lot of work on his mechanics. You know, let's find out what he's about in person and then make our decision.
Sure, and I personally think that he's the kind of guy that Bill Belichick would love to have an opportunity to bring in, but I also think that the second round, and it doesn't look as though he'll escape the second round, is probably too high to bring in a player like that. But, by all accounts, publicly, Bill Belichick has certainly praised Tim Tebow, and we've seen him show an interest in Florida guys, Urban Meyer guys in the past. So everyone is wondering if Tim Tebow will end up with the Patriots. This is a question that probably can change every single day during this time of year. Can you give us one player in the draft board, talking more first round, second round, whose stock is really rising right now, and one player whose stock is really dropping right now?
Well, let's go with the guys who are dropping first. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you got Dez Bryant, the receiver at Oklahoma State, a guy who was projected to be a top 10 pick, possibly a top 8 pick. The postseason has gone as poorly for him as could be. You know, I'm sure you've read the reports about his workout yesterday. Ran in the 4.5s, looked ill-prepared, really wasn't giving a lot of effort, reportedly left and forgot his spikes and had to run in new spikes. And again, that's just a continuation of some of the lack of concentration and focus that he showed during his, the small things that he did wrong during his college career, which ended up in the suspension. He's dropping down draft boards. I think Anthony Davis, another guy, a big talented pass-protecting left tackle, who really has the ability to be a top 10 pick, didn't work out at the combine, didn't show up for his pro day, said he was suffering from a stomach ailment. He's going to have to come back and do another pro day. You know, you want to try and make life easy for scouts. You don't want to have them, you know, when they're there, you want to work out for them. You don't want to have them making special trips just to see them, you know, to interrupt their schedule. That's not a good thing. So he's dropping down draft boards. Obviously, Terrence Cody, you know, the much ballyhooed player from Alabama, who again was considered a potential mid-first round pick. You saw the pictures at the Senior Bowl. He was awful at the combine. You know, people say, well, you know, his 40 was bad, but defensive linemen don't run 40s, and that's true, but his 10 was horrible. His vertical jump was terrible. His entire workout was just bad. I mean, there's a guy who was a potential top 15 pick, has fallen into the second round. As far as risers, Dan Williams of Tennessee, a guy we spoke about earlier, he's probably moved himself into the top 15 selections, possibly as high as number 12 to Miami. Wow. Brandon Graham is another guy that's moving up draft boards because of his playing style, because of the impact that he creates on the defensive side of the ball. And Mike Iupati, an offensive lineman, a guard who could maybe eventually develop into the tackle position. He's also a guy, some people thought he was a fringe first-round pick. He's probably going to be one of the top 20 selections, could go as early as Pittsburgh in round one.
Excellent stuff, Tony. Before we let you go, if you could just give you a chance to tell us about your site and sort of how you spend these days. Are you out at pro days every day, every week? How do you sort of spend this draft process?
I spend the pro days here watching them on my monitors when I can, if I can get the hookup, talking on the telephone. I like going to pro days. The problem is if I go to one pro day, I miss four other pro days.
Right.
So, example,
good point.
Today, I mean, South Carolina just finished. As I'm talking to you, I'm getting texts from the Texas pro day, and the USC pro day is about to start. In fact, the USC pro day probably started 30 minutes ago.
Yep.
So we basically monitor the pro days here from the office. As far as the site, as people may or may not know, I've been the draft analyst for Sports Illustrated, SI.com, since 2002. And then we have the off-site, TFYDraft.com, where you will get everything on all the pro days. We'll have all the combine results, the Senior Bowl coverage. We broke down every player, their practices every day. And within the next week or two, we'll probably have about 725 in-depth scouting reports on every player that's going to be eligible for the draft. So, you know, while people know about the Taylor Mays and the Mike Iupatis, you know, they don't know about the Julian Edelmans. And I'll be happy, proud to say that we were one of the only scouting services out there that had a complete report on a guy on Julian Edelman last year. And I'm sure there'll be some players like that this year who are selected. If they're not selected late in the draft, they're taken as free agents, and people are going to want information on them. I'm sure we'll have it.
Great stuff, Tony. It's a great website. Encourage everyone to check it out, draftinsider.net. We'll let you get back to watching those pro days, get all your information out there, and we much appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Tony Pauline, draftinsider.net and SI.com. Great information from him. He's watching all these pro days. He's analyzing all these guys, and he had some interesting thoughts on guys at the top of the draft, guys rising, guys falling, and you can check him out on draftinsider.net. We want to hear from you, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. We're going to take a break here in the draft room. We'll be back right after this.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks and Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about some dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, not tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
I was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and member FDIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehallatpatriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Now's your chance. Hit up B-Low in the draft room at 508-543-7482 or email webradio@patriots.com.
That's exactly what we want you to do here in the draft room. Like we said at the top of the show, we're coming your way every Wednesday, 12 to 1 Eastern here on patriots.com for the next 5 weeks. It is draft time. We just heard from Tony Pauline, who had some great insight. Looks like Sam Bradford will be going number one to St. Louis. That's what everyone seems to think, and he had an interesting selection for the Patriots at 22, Demaryius Thomas, wide receiver out of Georgia Tech. So we want to hear from you, webradio@patriots.com, also 508-543-7482. Just before we had him on, we were looking at some of the mock drafts and really looking at top fives and then where the Patriots might be going. A couple of Patriots selections. Rob Rang, who does a great job at CBSSports.com, he's got Jared Audrey.
Will also be a guest on this show.
He will be a guest. We will have him on in one of the upcoming weeks. He has Jared Audrey, the defensive tackle out of Penn State. I'll give you a few others. Chad Reuter, also of CBSSports.com. Jermaine Gresham, and has Jermaine Gresham coming to the Patriots, a tight end out of Oklahoma. Clark Judge, also has Jermaine Gresham. Don Banks, Sergio Kindle, and Pete Prisco. Has Ricky Sapp, the defensive end out of Clemson. Now, Audric, to me, is an extremely interesting guy, and if I were to be making a mock draft right now, he's the guy, actually, that I think the Patriots will select. I personally think that defensive line is the most likely position that the Patriots are going to go in. It might not be, it's a need area. It might not be the biggest need area for the Patriots, but I look at what they did from 2001 to 2004, 3 defensive linemen, great success there, which tells me a couple things. One, they really value big-time defensive linemen who fit in their system, not just any defensive lineman, but big-time defensive linemen out of the college ranks in the first round. And two, it tells me that they tend to scout defensive linemen pretty well. Now, Ron Brace, notwithstanding last year, he did not have a good enough year as a second-round pick, but, hey, you got to figure, you know, there's still a chance for him. But they did draft Myron Pryor as well in the seventh round and did a good job on him. You look at Mike Wright, who was undrafted. You look at Jarvis Green. They've got a need on the defensive line because, in my opinion, they've lost Richard Seymour and Jarvis Green over the last 8 months and haven't really replaced either one of them. I think Jared Audrick might be that guy. Now, we get back to the emails here, and Sam from Brighton, who we heard from earlier, he had a couple of different scenarios. One had Sergio Kindle to the Patriots in the first round. One had Golden Tate. He follows up with a couple of questions. I have some trade questions for you, he says. If you were the Patriots and Baltimore offered you their first pick, which is number 25, and their third-round pick for the Patriots' first pick at 22, would you take that deal? Absolutely, I'd take that deal. Now, the big asterisk there is you've got to see how the first 21 picks play out before you make that deal. You wouldn't make that trade until you're on the clock. If the Patriots get on the clock at 22, Baltimore is dangling 25 and a third-round pick to them for that first-round pick, and you've got three or four guys that are sort of ranked evenly on your draft board, you do it in a heartbeat for a few reasons. One, you're going to get one of the guys you want if you make that trade and you have three or four guys left at that are at a similar level. You'll get the guy you want. And two, getting a third-round pick in this year's draft, they have 12 picks overall, three of them in the second round. I think third round might be the most valuable round of this year's draft. I think the value in the third round, you hear a lot of draft experts say, you can get first-round caliber guys in the second and third round, and you'll be paying them far less than first-round picks would be getting. I think that's a no-brainer trade for the Patriots, but let's say Jared Audrick is a guy that they are truly after, and he's there at number 22. Wouldn't be worth making that trade with Baltimore if you don't think Jared Audrick will still be there at 25. So I like that scenario, Sam. I don't know that, you know, likewise, Baltimore would obviously have to have a guy at 22 that they're desperate for to make that trade. So it's an interesting one. One more trade from Sam. If you were the Patriots, would you trade 2 second-round picks this year and the Raiders pick next year for a top-five pick this year? And if the Pats had a top-five pick this year, who would they take? No, I don't think I would do that, Sam. My personal philosophy is, while it's great and it's important to get a top five, top 10 pick in your system every now and then, I just don't think this is the year to do it because of how deep it is. And that Raiders pick next year should be a pretty high pick, and it very well might be a pick in a year where the structure of rookie contracts has changed and you're not paying a top five pick $60 million guaranteed. Now, if the Raiders get Donovan McNabb, that might change things. But as of right now, I wouldn't touch that Raiders pick, and I wouldn't trade three picks in the top 53 of this year's draft for one top five pick. But to answer your question there, Sam, who would the Patriots take? Well, you can't go wrong, I think, whatever system you're playing with Dominican Sue or Gerald McCoy. I personally am fascinated by McCoy, like what Sue can do as well. But I also think an underrated area to look at for the Patriots is offensive tackle. You might say, well, why? They've got three guys that could start, Matt Leit, Nick Kazier, and Sebastian Vollmer. Well, while all three of those guys could be on the team this year, I wouldn't be stunned if in 2011 Sebastian Vollmer is the only one of those three on the team. I think they need a blue-chip tackle. Right tackle, left tackle, doesn't really matter. And I think there's a lot of guys this year. I think if they had a chance to get a guy like Russell Okung, a 6'9" giant, and a lot of guys, usually, I think there's a high percentage of top 10 offensive tackles that are picked that pan out. I think they'd be pretty happy to get a guy like that. A couple more emails in the inbox here in the draft room. I'm Brian Lowe, bringing you draft news, draft information, and taking your questions. This one is from Rory in Manchester in the UK. Hello, B-Low. I've been looking at the Patriots roster and thinking about where the team might go position-wise in the draft. Besides the obvious needs at wide receiver, outside linebacker, and running back, the team has lost a lot of guys on that defensive line, which is what I was just talking about. Jared Audrick is a guy being linked to New England in several mocks. Even if Bill takes Audrick, we might still need another body, and there's plenty of picks to take one with. I was wondering who you like for a mid-to-late-round pick on the D-line. Well, to answer that question, Rory, Jared Audrick, as I said, is the guy. I think he's going to go in that 16 to 24 range. I think he'd be a great guy for the Patriots to take. I'm starting to get very, very intrigued by Dan Williams out of Tennessee, the massive defensive tackle. Now, I do think that he's going to end up going before the Patriots pick at 22, and Tony Pauline indicated that he is a fast riser on this board. Teams are looking for those mammoth guys in the middle of their defensive line. A lot of teams are. But based on the success that that Gerard Mayo has had in the Patriots system, and he played behind Dan Williams for a couple years at Tennessee, I think you might be able to get some good insight out of Gerard Mayo. I'm sure they've done their homework on Dan Williams, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that they're looking at, and potentially, if they like him enough, maybe they move up if he's still there at 16, 17, 18. Something to keep in mind. Rory tosses out a few other lower range guys in the second round or beyond. He likes Alex Carrington, but he should go in the second round area. There's Terrell Troop from University of Central Florida, Jeff Owens from Georgia, and C.J. Wilson from East Carolina. Any of these guys who fit for the Pats or anyone else you like, thanks, and don't forget to breathe, Rory says. Well, hey, Rory, you know, that's one of my problems here. I just get so excited when I'm talking fantasy football during the fall draft right now. I do realize I need to take a deep breath. But we only have 1 hour here, Rory. What do you want from me? We've got 1 hour. We've got 1 hour. You factor in a five-minute break and an interview, and, you know, we're down to 30, 35 minutes here for me to take your emails and give my opinions. And we want to get your emails, so I got to talk fast, Rory. Anyways, the guys that you mentioned there, Terrell Troop intrigues me. Defensive tackle, 6'3", 310. I think he's got some good explosiveness, and I think he's a guy, Central Florida. Bill Belichick spent a lot of time in Florida. Wouldn't be surprised if he had a look at him. And C.J. Wilson out of East Carolina, a guy looking probably a third, fourth round pick. Really good tackler at defensive end. He's an interesting guy. Now, Rory brings up an interesting question as far as guys on the defensive line, any guys I like. And every year at this time, that defensive end outside linebacker situation comes into play with the Patriots. How difficult it is for the Pats to find guys, high-level, high-caliber guys, who can make that transition from college to the pros, and specifically the 3-4 defense that the Patriots like to run. They simply don't take guys like that until later in the draft, and they've had marginal success at best. To me, there's a reason for that. I think these guys like Sergio Kindle, Brandon Graham, guys like that, Ricky Sapp out of Clemson, are guys that different mock drafts have coming to the Patriots, but I don't think they're going to go in that direction in the first round because of that learning curve. And I think when they find a guy that they like, they're still hesitant to take him. And we've seen in the last couple of years, linebackers like a Clay Matthews, who they passed up, who has had great success. It's got to be a question that they're asking, but I just don't think they're going to take guys like that in the first round. I'm sure they'll take a couple guys in the sixth or seventh round that they think they can mold into what they're looking for at that position. I just don't think this is the year. And another thing I'll say about that is every time I think that there's a position that the Patriots have a major need at, and this has got to be the year they go in the first round, they don't go in that direction. And wide receiver comes to mind. They have a major need at wide receiver, and I felt that way before free agency began. I thought that they need 2 to 3 wide receivers to step in 2010 and make a difference, especially with Wes Welker being injured. Well, all they've done in free agency so far is bring in David Patton, who I think is a nice guy to have in the locker room, and I think he might still have a little production left in him, but they need more than that. They didn't go for it in free agency. My guess is they're not even going to go in the first round at wide receiver in the draft. I think the second round is where they might go. I just don't see it in the first round. Thanks, Rory, for your email. This one is from Jeff. Hi there. Do you see the Pats using the Raiders pick to draft and pick Jerry Hughes? Jerry Hughes, I'll put in that same category of guys, defensive ends, outside linebackers, and apparently there are reports that the Patriots have brought in Jerry Hughes or will bring in Jerry Hughes for a visit. I don't think you're looking in that direction. I think if what you're asking here is correct, Jeff, you're saying would the Patriots trade next year's Raiders pick into the top or into somewhere in this year's draft and take Jerry Hughes? No, I think Jerry Hughes could be there for them at their pick at 22. He could be a guy that slides into the top of the second round, and maybe you trade up within your second round picks and move up to take Jerry Hughes. That's a possibility as well. This is the Draft Room here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is Brian Lowe. Web radio at Patriots.com is a way to reach us, and you can ring us up at 508-543-7482. I brought up a name earlier in the show, Rob Gronkowski, who, when I was watching tape of tight ends, wow, when I watched this guy, I said this guy would be a perfect fit. He reminded me from an energy and sort of body type standpoint of Mike Vrabel, to be honest with you. And he's a guy who had great production at Arizona, but here's the problem, and it's a big problem. He missed all of last year due to back surgery. As I was going through looking at guys who I think might be Patriot targets, I thought Rob Gronkowski would be the guy. Here's what I read on CBSSports.com from earlier this week. NFLDraftScout.com has confirmed that Arizona tight end Rob Gronkowski is being red flagged by teams due to a spinal condition. The source, a scout with an NFL team, confirmed that his team's doctors were questioning if Gronkowski, quote, would ever be 100%, end quote, and that his team was acknowledging the injury by lowering Gronkowski's grade. The scout declined to talk specifically of Gronkowski's condition. He's a guy who was a mid-second round pick coming into these last couple of months, and that's with acknowledging that injury, but knowing his production from 2008 and previous. And here's the problem. He will get drafted, but that red flag could be enough to push him into the third round or later. It's a problem to me because, I think Gronkowski is a perfect guy for the Patriots and really fills a need that I think they'll address in the second round. When I was talking about defensive linemen earlier, and the Patriots often, or certainly earlier in this last decade, looking to take defensive linemen in the first round, I think tight end is a similar position for them. In 02 and in 04, they took a tight end in the first round. They had, I guess you could say, good, not great success. Dan Graham certainly panned out, but, you know, his primary role was as a blocker. And some might say, and I would probably agree, that where they took him might be too high to take a primary blocker. And then Benjamin Watson, I think, was a moderately successful tight end for them. He's moved on to Cleveland, but probably not first-round caliber. But the Patriots have a need at tight end. Right now, honestly, the three tight ends they have on their roster, Algie Crumpler, Robbie Agnone, and Rob Myers, I wouldn't be stunned if none of them are on the roster when it come opening day. Now, right now, sure, Algie Crumpler is your number one tight end, but I think they have a big hole there. I would have thought Gronkowski would fit that, but that red flag, be very interesting to see if the Patriots are among those red flagging him with his spinal condition. Email here from Nano. Bilo, love the show. Love the new show. Thanks for bringing interesting perspectives and insights to the draft that Pats fans can't get anywhere else. Well, thanks for that message there. That's what we're trying to do here. My particular questions concern Carlos Dunlap. At 6'6" and 290 pounds with elite speed, he seems like he might fit the prototypical Bill Belichick mold of outside linebacker. I know he has some off-the-field issues like the DUI before the Alabama game, but other Gator players say that he never will give up on you or let you down. He's never going to run around or hurt you. Maybe we can get him with one of our second-round picks. What do you think? Excellent email there, Nano. And the Florida guys really intrigue me on many different levels. One, that's a winning program. You know, love them or hate them, they have a winning mentality and a lot of productive, talented players. There's no question about it. Another layer to that is Bill Belichick's relationship with Urban Meyer. And what I've always said in the past when it comes to his relationship with Nick Saban, Pat Hill at Fresno State, it doesn't mean that just because he has a relationship with these guys, he's going to pick their players. But to me, what it does mean is he's going to get the real deal. He's going to get the scoop from these guys, and I think he trusts a guy like Urban Meyer to steer him in the right direction. Now, I don't think Urban Meyer is going to badmouth any of his players to Bill Belichick, but I bet Bill Belichick, when talking to a guy like Urban Meyer, he can get the sense of what Urban Meyer truly thinks of that player as far as being a pro prospect. Now, I don't know how those conversations have gone in his dealings with Urban Meyer in this particular draft. We know his interest in Tim Tebow, or we know the fact that he has expressed publicly an interest in Tim Tebow. What really does that mean? We don't know. But there are a number of other Florida players, Joe Hayden, who will probably be off the board before the Patriots pick, and it's a cornerback and not a position that the Patriots are likely to go in the first round. You've got Aaron Hernandez, the tight end, and with Rob Gronkowski maybe being knocked down the board, maybe Aaron Hernandez is a guy the Patriots target. And you've got quite a few others, obviously Tim Tebow. Now, Carlos Dunlap is, like we've talked about with these other guys, rushers. Pass rushing is a position they need. I think those DUI and those character concerns are real. I'm not saying they're real in the sense that Carlos Dunlap is a bad guy, but I think they're real in the fact that teams have to take that into account. Have to take question marks like that into account. A college player coming up with a DUI in season, that's got to be taken into account. But I think he's an intriguing guy in the second round, and we heard from one of our other emailers earlier, Sam, who thinks he'd be a good fit for them with their first second-round pick. I agree. I would not touch him in the first round. I don't really know if I'd touch him early in the second round or with their first pick, but if he's still there at 53, I think I'd consider him. Now, here's what else I have to say. Boy, I have a lot of information. I apologize to all those readers who say I need to take a deep breath, but we got a lot of information to get to. Smoke screens. And what we see and hear from Bill Belichick, and you know, we see reports every now and then that they're bringing in this guy for a visit, they're working out this guy privately after his pro day. What do all of these things mean? There is no way to know. We won't know until April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th what teams really think of these guys. For all we know, the Patriots adore Ndamukong Suh and are going to trade everything they have to get up and get him. For all we know, when we read that they have brought in this guy from North Carolina for a visit or they had dinner with Tim Tebow, for all we know, it could be genuine. It could be a smokescreen. They could be thinking it to the next step, saying, well, everyone's going to think this is a smokescreen. We'll fake him out. It's genuine interest. We simply don't know. We don't know about any of these guys. We'll hear a lot more anecdotes, and we'll hear propaganda and innuendo in the next 3 weeks, and you just can't know what to trust. That's what makes this draft process so intriguing, and there's still 3 more weeks to go on that. We always want to hear from you here on the Draft Room, webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. And, you know, we're going to be coming to you each and every week between now and the draft. So we'll be coming to you.
And the week after the
draft. And the week after the draft, which, you know, is going to be a very interesting time to analyze and dissect. We've got to keep in mind, of course, you can only take so much from that, you know, from those first days after a draft. It's hard to analyze it too much before these guys actually play, and then there'll be a pro day for the Patriots as well. So again, St. Louis Rams have the first pick in the draft, and it looks like, based on what people are saying about Sam Bradford's workout, that he will go number one to St. Louis, leaving the two primo defensive tackles, Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy, to most likely go to the Detroit Lions and Tampa Bay Buccaneers in some order. The Patriots, of course, have the 22nd pick, and then in the second round, they've got three picks, 44th, 47th, and 53. Why do they have those three picks in the second round? Well, their own pick is 53. In my opinion, they committed a theft times two last year during the draft with both,
with both
Jacksonville and Tennessee. They traded a third-round pick in 2009 for a second-round pick in 2010. To me, that's theft. Maybe not every year, but I think the Patriots must have known, you know, last year's draft, you know, well, after the second round, there's not as much depth there. We can get what we need maybe in the fourth round, fifth round. Let's make these trades with Jacksonville and Tennessee, who obviously targeted specific guys. I think it was the cornerback Cox for Jacksonville and the tight end Jared Cook for Tennessee. And the Patriots now have three picks in the second round of a draft that everyone says is an incredibly deep draft, certainly through two rounds, and the Patriots now have an opportunity to take four guys or make some moves. They've got those two picks in the first round next year. They're in a pretty good position. We had Tony Pauline on today's show, draftinsider.net and si.com. We have many more guests lined up for upcoming weeks, and of course, we want to hear what you have to say at webradio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the phone number to hear from us. The studio is being infiltrated now by PFW guys. I thought, Jason, I had this hour to myself. It's 1:59:40 right now, or 12:59:40. These guys shouldn't be coming in this early.
I'm quite sure you had this hour to yourself.
No, we had a guest and a break. But we did get, you'll appreciate
and a decent amount of emails.
And we did have one email, you'll appreciate this
Fred
one.
Fred in Foxborough.
Rory from Manchester said, thanks, and don't forget to breathe. So we did discuss that, Andy, and I know that's a critique I've heard from you guys as well.
Take a breath.
Take a breath. We're going to take a breath. We'll be back with the Draft Room next Wednesday at noon. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.